This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The Trump administration has given the formal go-ahead to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil and gas drilling, which is a move backed by the nation's largest farm organization. The move, authorized by a 2017 budget bill, caps a 40-year GOP effort opposed by environmentalists and some Alaskan natives, now likely is to go to court. But it's supported by the energy interests and much of the U.S. agriculture sector, American Farm Bureau's Ryan Yates.
Farm Bureau is supportive of domestic energy production and certainly would support efforts to develop energy resources anywhere in the U.S., and that certainly includes the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or ANWR.
Farming is energy intensive, and Yates says the more sources of energy, the better.
To lower costs and those inputs for farmers are already looking at very slim margins and trying to make a profit with what they have.
Alternative energy systems, including wind, solar, and biogas, can all improve efficiency and cut costs and pollution, but it takes investment.
In any sort of business, you know, you're going to have to invest. Nothing's free. So again, you know, but there's reasons to invest in new and modern technology.
And agriculture's done that for years, reducing its carbon footprint significantly. But the need for fossil fuels is not expected to go away anytime soon. So for now, Yates says the American Farm Bureau is checking all of the above energy boxes, including oil and gas, from the ANWR. In other news, out of Washington, lawmakers in the House of Representatives this week have introduced the Helping America's Farmers Act. The legislation would create a new economic injury disaster loan program at the Department of Agriculture's Farm Service Agency. Introduced by Representative Jana Hayes, a Connecticut Democrat, and Antonio Delgado, a New York Democrat, the bill is endorsed by the National Milk Producers Federation and Dairy Farmers of America. The bill would appropriate $10 billion for direct loans through the FSA, along with another $10 billion for a guaranteed loan program through FSA lenders, and $300 million for administrative costs. Under the new loan program, applicants would also be eligible for a $20,000 grant upon application and can seek forgiveness for their loan based on demonstrated economic hardship. Application priority is given to farmers and ranchers located in the areas that were hit the hardest by an economic disaster, as well as minority, veteran, and women-owned operations. Representative Hayes says the legislation will get farmers the help they so desperately need. Moving on into the latest crop news, the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour has moved on yesterday and found a good soybean crop developing in Indiana. Chad Smith has more.
The eastern leg of the Pro Farmer 2020 Crop Tour scouted fields in Indiana on Tuesday during day two. Brian Grady, editor at Pro Farmer, is leading the eastern leg and talked about the Indiana corn crop numbers.
So Indiana corn yield came in at 179.8, and that was up 11.4% from what we found on Crop Tour last year. A lot of times we compare to what USDA found on August 1st. Their number was 188, and it was up 11.2%. So the percentage change year to year is almost identical. So we feel really good about that Indiana number. Versus the three-year average, it's up 4.8%, so it's better than our recent average that we've gotten on Crop Tour. And I think that's pretty descriptive of what we saw for the Indiana corn crop.
Scouts on the eastern leg did notice the Indiana corn crop had some emergence issues due to cold weather in the spring that slowed down some germination.
We did find a number of blank stalks, so skips in rows, either stalks that didn't emerge or did not have an ear on them, had an ear that was very small, those types of things. So there were some emergence issues, and that held back the yields. I think it could have been even a better Indiana corn crop than what we measured.
Grady said the Indiana soybean crop looks good.
Just very, very consistent and impressed. Pod counts came in there at 1281, and that was up almost 39% from what we found last year. Now, last year was a lowly podded crop, so we look at the three-year average, and it was still up almost 13% from the three-year average. So Indiana soybean crop is strong. Lots of pods out there. The question now is, will it get the moisture that it needs to finish out strong?
Indiana did get some of those needed needed rains on Tuesday during the early hours of the crop tour.
Some of the state of Indiana got rains because we got rained on as we were leaving Indianapolis, and our scouts made the first couple of stops in the rain, and so very timely showers that rolled through at least a portion of the state.
The scouts did see some wind damage from the derecho storm in the corn crop, but nowhere near what they will see in Iowa. As a result, Grady said the soybeans are in better shape than the state's corn at this point in the season.
The soybean crop is better than the corn crop, relatively speaking, and I think it weathered the storm a little bit better than what the corn crop did. So I've seen bean crops that are all over the board. This one's pretty consistent, and my history on tour tells me that when you have consistency, that's when you have big yields. And so I'm anticipating a big soybean yield out of Indiana as long as they get good weather here into the end of the year.
Wednesday's crop schedule includes scouting in fields between Bloomington, Illinois and Iowa City, Iowa. Chad Smith reporting.
Moving on to the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwestern Crop Tour, they finished up with the state of Nebraska Wednesday. They started there on Monday with what the scouts thought was a less than exciting showing in the field. Dustin Hoffman reports from Nebraska.
Western Tour Director Jeff Wilson runs down how the state finished. The northern half of the state is much drier. South of the Platte River, things looked better.
The northern half is very droughty or has some abnormally dry conditions, and it's going to be very important for some rains to get through there to reach some of the yield potential that we did measure this week. And I think that's especially true for the beans, but also the corn wasn't quite as mature as it is in the southern part of the state.
Wilson said the corn was still inconsistent in the south, but most of that inconsistency was due to weather earlier in the growing season.
In the south, I thought the corn was maybe a little more inconsistent in the both irrigated and non-irrigated areas, which is where most of the irrigation takes place. Part of that inconsistency is we had some of that cold weather. It probably hurt some of the germination, and that was clear in the plant counts, which were down a little bit from a year ago. And then we had a little bit of heat at one point. There's definitely a little more green snap than probably normal, or at least some wind damage more than normal any given year. I don't think there's that much hail damage than normal, maybe even a little bit less according to some of the Nebraska scouts that are on the tour this year. So the finish is the key part for the corn crop and the bean crop as we move into the what I like to call the money-making days of August and early September.
In contrast, the beans across Nebraska were very consistent.
The one word I'll say is consistent. Consistent, consistent, consistent. The bean pods were high consistently. The plants were healthy consistently. There wasn't much disease. I think part of the reason why there isn't much disease is because it is a little bit drier. So now if you get a little bit of rain, you know, beans like to have a little stress, and then you give them that last little shot of rain. That's going to pump up the beans that are in those pods, and we have plenty of pods that are there to make a factory and a good crop.
Pro Farmer released their tour estimates for Nebraska on Tuesday evening.
So in Nebraska, we estimated 175.2, call it, bushels per acre on the corn. That's up 1.5% from last year and 1.6% from the three-year average. So that's kind of just an average corn crop in Nebraska. And then on soybeans were a very good number, 1,298 pods in a 3 foot by 3 foot square. That's up 7.2% from a year ago. So overall, you know, every scout that I've talked to, that's kind of the one word they all talked about is consistency.
Wilson said Nebraska will definitely need rain in the next 2 weeks to get everything to the finish line.
The finish is going to be the whole story as we get into early September. You know, the forecasters are talking about the possibility of these pop-up storms happening at any given time because it's riding that high-pressure ridge. And it's very difficult to predict where those storms might develop, how much they're going to develop, or how much they're going to deliver, and where they're going to deliver it. It's all about what happens to the rain over the course of the next 2 weeks.
On Wednesday, the western leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour heads into what will be the biggest challenge of the week, the drought and wind-damaged fields of Iowa. I'm Dustin Hoffman.
And we'll bring you that Wednesday report tomorrow morning right here on WSMI. And with the reports of such a good soybean crop out there this year, it might be somewhat concerning that the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals this week has declined a rehearing request of its June dicamba decision. That decision leaves Bayer, Corteva, and BASF with one final legal option to overturn the ruling vacating registration of dicamba herbicides, which is appealing to the Supreme Court. On June 3rd, the court vacated the registration for Bayer's Xtendimax, Corteva's Fexapan, and BASF's Ingenia, all dicamba-based herbicides. Last month, in July, all three companies petitioned for a group of judges to rehear the case, known as a rehearing in bank. A statement from BASF to DTN says, quote, "We are assessing additional legal options, including a challenge to the U.S. Supreme Court. However, the ruling does not apply to future registrations of dicamba herbicide, and the Environmental Protection Agency is reviewing whether or not to allow for its use in 2021. Earlier this month, a report from the environmental group stated, quote, "EPA should not renew dicamba product registrations until further research shows dicamba formulations will not harm off-target plants." Of course, dicamba is a major pest deterrent for soybeans. Moving on now into the latest state ag news for your Thursday. The Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello is missing the state fair. Ag Day was supposed to be Tuesday, but the event canceled earlier this summer was due to the ongoing pandemic. Costello wanted to share this message had the fair gone on.
There's kind of two messages. Number one, my message would have been the importance of youth, you know, maintaining youth in agriculture. Obviously, technology is ever-changing, and it's so important that we make sure that youth is engaged in agriculture. Our 4-H, our FFA, those groups are going on to become farmers in other aspects of agriculture. Obviously, there's a lot of non-traditional ag opportunities out there as well. What I would say, because of the COVID era that we're all in right now, my message right now, which obviously is different than what it would have been, is the resiliency of the farmers in Illinois. And, I look at the scare we had with meat supply and our meat processing plants, and how farmers have stepped up and worked together to really come together and at the end of the day surpass some of these huge obstacles that have been in the way with our food supply.
And to put the cancellation of the state fair in a historical context, the only other two times the state fair has been canceled was during World War II and the Civil War. In other state ag news, we'll recap your crop progress and condition report from Sunday. There were 5.7 days suitable to work in the field last week. Statewide, the average temperature was 75 degrees, 1.5 degrees above normal. Precipitation was just under 1 inch at 87 hundredths. That's 4 hundredths of an inch below normal. The topsoil moisture supply is 3% very short, 20% short, 72% adequate, and 5% surplus. Moisture in the subsoil is about the same, 1% very short, 14% short, 82% adequate, and 3% surplus. Corn in the milk stage is 81% compared to the 5-year average of 78. Corn dented so far is 21% compared to the 5-year average of 33. Corn condition as of this past Sunday was 1% very poor, 5% poor, 18% fair, 60% good, and 16% excellent. Soybeans blooming as of Sunday were 97% completed compared to the 5-year average of 95%. Soybeans setting their pods are at 84% compared to the 5-year average of 81%, and the soybean condition as of this past Sunday was 2% very poor, 5% poor, 17% fair, 58% good, and 18% excellent. And with these conditions, there's only 6% of the corn crop in very poor to poor condition, and 7% of the bean crop in very poor to poor condition. That puts the crop totally in very good condition going into September. And finally, another state ag news on your Thursday. It's been referred to as the Iowa hurricane, and DTN Chief Ag Meteorologist Bryce Anderson says that may be a fair comparison. He's talking about last Monday's derecho that tore a path of destruction through 770 miles of the Midwest, including Illinois. He says some estimates have as many as 37.7 million acres of Midwestern farmland acreage impacted by last Monday's system.
I don't know that there's really any way to quantify the kind of damage that we've seen in terms of a corn crop loss. I know there have been some ballpark estimates put out there, but there's going to be many acres that are simply completely unharvestable. And one more detail that concerns me is I know that crop insurance is a major investment on the part of so many producers, but I don't know how many of those policies have the detail that covers wind damage. So there's another question that goes in there. It's really caused a real complication for the entire ag industry in that swath of the Midwest.
President Trump was in Iowa on Tuesday discussing the damage there. And moving on now into local ag news, don't forget that this morning there will be a USDA milk distribution held at the Carlinville Plaza just west of Billy's Furniture. That will be from 9 a.m. until 1 this afternoon. And anybody with a need for dairy products is more than welcome for the free distribution. Again, at the Carlinville Plaza from 9 until 1 this morning there in Carlinville. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here for a Thursday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So again, for this Thursday morning, August 20th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.